Good afternoon, everybody. Hello. Hi. Thanks for waiting and for coming at the end of the day, towards the end of the week. My name is Paul Yuknovich, and I'm one of the lead program managers in Visual Studio. My team actually currently is responsible for all of the Azure and cloud tooling that we have in Visual Studio, but I'm also an old friend and an old fan of data. I've worked with data throughout my career, including the very first version of ADO.NET, strongly typed data sets, binding to objects, all the stuff that kind of translated, I think, now into what we see with data services, OData, and EDM. So I'm really happy to be here talking to you about OData. This is kind of an exciting topic. As we know, data is absolutely everywhere. And as business developers, what we're trying to do is unlock that data from the sources where it is and make it really accessible to do the kinds of scenarios and the kinds of tasks we need to do in our job. So what I want to do really over the next hour or so, just a little bit over an hour, we want to talk a little bit about, you know, what really is OData, provide that kind of just a base understanding, get on the same page there, talk about why RESTful or, you know, URL, URI-based services are becoming so popular. I can attest to that working, you know, mostly in the cloud now. And also I want to, you know, then kind of dive into, well, how do we take data from our existing systems and how do we expose that as OData so it's a ubiquitous format that everything else can use? And then how do we build a whole number of clients that can work with that OData, whether that's mobile devices, your everyday desktop line of business applications, your admin screens, you know, there's web pages. There's just so many things that we can do once we have that data in a common format. We'll definitely dig deeper, and we'll talk about the specific tools we have inside of Microsoft that really help you with OData. We'll talk about some partner products that really help with that. Then we'll go even deeper than that. We'll talk about some implementation options, and we'll talk about some of the things that are coming next. You can see OData start to show up in newer technologies like Web API, which show up in ASP.NET, and I think the synergy and alignment with OData will just continue. And so you might also see, you know, coming from Azure, that our table service is completely exposed as OData. So that's the kind of thing that over time you'll see us investing more and more in at Microsoft. And we do have an announcement. I guess it was more of an announcement 2 weeks ago, but I'll, just in case you didn't hear it, we'll talk about it again. Does that sound like a okay use of an hour? Pretty good? Okay, sounds good. So just, you know, basic introduction to OData. You know, I think about a few things. You know, the first is we want a really common wire format. Actually, let's even take a step back. You know, how have we been doing working with data for years? Well, there's always a protocol that we're working with, right? Whether it's, you know, in DDS or whether it's, you know, Azimex web services that return data over SOAP and it looks kind of like an XSD schema. Until nowadays when there's actually all these just different freeform REST APIs that can return data in any sort of format, whether that's XML, ATOM, or also JSON. So with OData, really that serialization format has been formalized, and it really is, you know, what we think of as the best way to have a web service that exposes data in a standard way, in a standard serialization format. The second thing about the standardization is the standardized query syntax, right? So like any good RESTful kind of a service, you know, you basically use URLs and URIs to query in and index into your data. Well, there's a standardized syntax, which is part of the protocol, which lets you do, you know, whether it's filtering, sorting, finding, it's all very standardized, and we're going to play really interactively with that today. Another thing is, you know, I think unlike some other web services and REST services that we see today, the metadata is part of the service. Or another way to think about it is the service is self-describing, right? So it describes the kind of operations and actions that you can do. It also describes the schema and the result format of the data coming back, right? Which is incredibly helpful. And, you know, a long time ago, we would kind of go to great lengths to kind of expose whether it was type libraries or XSD schemas to actually describe what you can expect. And, you know, OData is really great because you can, you know, basically put OData over whether it's a database or a data source, and it's going to self-describe to all the consumers basically how to use it. And I think really the best way to get acclimated with OData is just to see it in action. Before I quickly do that, I'd like to get to know you better. Maybe you guys can get to know each other better. So let's think about some basic things. So who's building line of business applications? Just about everybody. That's great. Who's building desktop applications? A lot of us. Who's building web applications? Most of us. Okay. Who's building web services? Who's already building stuff on top of OData? Okay. Who'd like to be building stuff on OData? All right. Awesome. Check. Okay. Well, I think, as you can see, you know, there's some familiarity with OData, but, you know, there's some folks new to it, so I'll try to walk that line. Definitely also calibrating for the desktop apps and for web apps. And if it's okay with you, I'll even show maybe JavaScript, which might represent building a mobile app that, you know, could be a mobile app on WinJS, which is Microsoft's kind of Metro approach to building an app, or even on something like jQuery Mobile, right, which would have the ultimate kind of breadth for different clients that you can target. All right, so with that said, let's switch over to the demo machine. And let's just get started, and we'll pick, you know, one of the best things about data demos is you can just freeform pick what data we get to work with. I think right now I want to work with Netflix. It's not really business data, but you guys stare at business data all day long, so this might be actually kind of fun. So what I'm doing is I'm browsing into an actual data service, an actual OData service that Netflix has stood up on their side, you know, with some cooperation from Microsoft, but really they felt it was important to expose their data in this common format. And the really cool thing about this service is you can all work with it now. It's completely open at this point. There's no permissions or sign-ups or paying that you need to do. You know, all the Netflix asks is that we be reasonable. I think they said don't be a dork in some forum post, but we'll try to be respectful as we use this. And the cool thing is it's just a really great way to explore OData. So if I look here, just into their default catalog, I'm starting to see that XML Atom feed, and it's just showing me, okay, here's what's possible. Here's all the different collections of entities or entity sets that Netflix is exposing, from titles to people, you know, and there you can have relationships just like, you know, SQL relational data, and we can start to kind of navigate through. But the cool thing is I can start to see, wow, okay, I make a request in the browser or anything that can make a web request, it responds back with XML, and then that's both human readable and machine readable, right? And that's really that kind of standard format where if our applications expose something like this in a standard format, any sort of client can understand the metadata and start working with it instantly on a machine level. All right, so let's start making some more requests and see what Netflix responds back with. So if I type in titles, that's going to come back with over 10,000 records. I probably don't want to do that. So we're going to do, you know, we can start to use the OData syntax and just say, like, top equals 5. And, you know, just like a SQL query, we're going to get the top 5 results. And if I scroll down, we're seeing some good stuff. Like, I'm starting to see that metadata. And then I drill in, and I see a whole bunch of data. And I'll try to pick the thing that's incredibly scary, incredibly fun, is you don't know what data is going to come back at any time. So let's take this endpoint. So if I want to drill into a particular title or a particular entity, you know, we'll basically quote in, just kind of like a collection lookup, we'll quote in which ID that we want to look up. And then I can also paste that into the browser, or I can make any request against that URL. And now the OData service will respond back with the data that just maps to that particular entity. And then I can use the $value if I want, and I can get the value of any particular property. So you can start to see that, you know, for navigating through and exploring data and collections, you know, going from the list of collections to a particular collection to a particular entity to a value is incredibly simple. And then what I can do is I can start to bring to bear some more powerful queries. Let's not do that one yet. I'm getting ahead of myself, literally. So what we can do is we can set the filter equal to a property, or it's basically equal to a condition. In this case, the OData syntax is the name of the property, some kind of operator, equals, less than or equals, not equals. In the odata.org website has a lot of that syntax kind of outlined for you. And then a value or another expression. So here I'll have a literal value for attribute to Bill Evans. And I'm going to search and I'm going to find all the results that have to do with that. Or another thing I could do that's if you know the exact value. If you want to do like a freeform search, well, I'll just take this. You could do substring of, which is an actual function or an actual expression. And the thing we want to get the substring of is Evans, so it's a part of that title. And then the property that we're going to look against is name. And then that still can come back with a lot of data. So I'll just take the top five. Right? And as you can quickly see, we drilled in to every single title in the Netflix inventory that has the word Evans. And then I can work with a particular entity. Someone say it louder, or I'm about to figure it out. I thought it was scrolled over. Thanks. All right. Thank you very much. See, you guys are helping me. Okay, and now we're drilling into a particular entity. So as you can see, I think that was the most basic. You know, we make a request, it responds back. It's pretty easy to visualize it in the browser. Nowadays, you know, there are actually a few different response formats that are pretty important. And you started to see me, you started to see it peek back. But this is Atom XML. It's very descriptive, but actually it can be pretty big over the wire, right? XML is so expressive. So what we're starting to see more and more in the industry is we're seeing JSON, or basically the JavaScript object notation. And there are different flavors now of JSON. It started out also as pretty verbose, like you could see relationship information, you could see some metadata. But there's also even a JSON Lite format, which we'll talk about a little bit, which the third version of OData, OData V3, if your service supports that, it can come back with an incredibly light version that looks, you know, just like the struct that you'd expect back. So in most fully implemented OData services, what I can do is type in format. And I'm basically, this is the same as passing a request header that says, I accept application slash JSON. But this is a kind of the part of the OData protocol that will do that work for me. So I can explicitly ask for format equals Atom or format equals JSON. And I know for a fact what data format I'm going to get back over the wire. And that's really huge. But as you can see, I'm getting this in the form of JSON, which is just a bit less expressive, a little bit lighter weight, a little bit more essential around the data that's showing. And it really kind of depends on what you want to do. There's a huge ecosystem around Atom. There's a huge ecosystem around JSON. A lot of JavaScript-y, kind of webby sorts of things will tend to parse JSON right out of the box, like you'll see JSON.parse, APIs like that. But we also see OData libraries and Atom libraries frequently, too. So I think the good thing is you don't have to worry too much about it. Your clients will be able to consume either, and you'll be able to produce services that produce either. One more tool that I think is good to have under your tool belt. It's a little bit more advanced. We have a free tool called Fiddler that you can go get. And what I like to do, I know everybody does this differently. But I like to start in the composer and basically structure a URL that I want to inspect. And then what I can do is I can play with the request headers. And this gives me kind of an experimentation tool where I can pretend that I'm any kind of web browser or any kind of web client API. I can issue exactly the web get or post kinds of requests that I want to make, and see exactly what the response comes back as. And this even has tooling to kind of show you the different ways that you would parse data that comes back, right? So let's take the simplest example. We'll take the same titles. That'll probably be really big. So let's say top 5. We'll execute this. This will dispatch another browser instance, and it's kind of cool. Like a profiler, you can see any requests that are happening from underneath. So even if I had an application or an API that sits on top of Netflix, that API would show up first as a request, and then you'd see the call to Netflix happening underneath. So it's actually really helpful to kind of diagnose and understand what's going on. So let's have a look at the output here. And by default, the service is returning XML. It's a little interesting to see here, but my Zoom at tool's closed. But you can see XML has kind of opened this tab, and that's the default format we get back, and it's nicely getting parsed. I can always look at the raw response coming back from the request, which is even a little bit more verbose. But by default, actually, I'm not getting JSON, which is what we saw just a few moments ago. So if I want to get the JSON, I go back to the composer. I would say accepts application JSON. And that didn't work, probably because it's a V3 service, so I need to do one more thing, and I'll explain it. I think I might have to do this. Okay. Accept, thank you. Pluralization. I'm used to Visual Studio pluralizing for me, see? Thank you. Awesome. And now we're getting the JSON response back. Or if you look at the raw, you can see it's actually a bit more compact. I'll speak to just quickly what I did here. This is a little bit more of a tip and trick. As I mentioned, there's different versions of OData that are out there right now. Different versions of the spec. And V2 has been pretty common, and I think the last fully released version of OData that we shipped in Visual Studio, let's say in 2010, we'd be doing V2 by default. And V2 at the time would expose always a verbose JSON, but according to the spec, and you know, with all the partners working on OData, it was decided that for simplicity, the default application JSON response now should be that lighter weight, the JSON light format. So what you'll actually see is in a V3 service, you might get no response at all, or you might get an exception because JSON is meant to be the light format, and that service hasn't implemented the light format yet. So for compatibility reasons, what you can do is you can pass in this OData verbose flag. And that will be the way to kind of tell the server that you still want that verbose format, the kind of the V2 format. And you could even, we could start to append with commas and say, well, I'll do both application JSON and application JSON OData verbose if I want to have maximum compatibility with any kind of service that I'd be using. So just a couple tips and tricks. If you run into that, that could be what's going on. I know it's a big room. Any quick questions before I go on? All right. So we did our introduction. Now let's kind of talk about the use of OData. We have a screenshot of a number of different products up here, ranging from Microsoft, that actually all use OData, and some of them even produce OData. So as you can see, there's really a lot of momentum inside of Microsoft to support this as a first-class thing. So when you see the Excel icon, I think about Power Pivot. You can go get Power Pivot today for Excel 2010, and you can mine any sort of data service and pull it into Excel, and that's really powerful, especially for big data, right? If you have a lot of data, you want to see it in a pivot table, a pivot chart, you can mine it super quickly and make some business decisions. You could also have the output of your business application create a pivot chart, which then could be consumed by your business users, your end users. Some other things that we'll call out, you know, Visual Studio itself has had fantastic OData support for two versions now. So you can produce OData-based services. What you're going to look for is the WCF data service, and I'll have a demo for you that in a little bit. We also have, as a part of Visual Studio, we now have the light switch product, and I'll show you a demo of that. But that's squarely aimed at line of business developers who want to just have the easiest way to build forms over data and the easiest way to build business applications. So between, you know, light switch and Visual Studio, you have this really big spectrum of custom applications you can make that either use or produce OData. And some other, you know, things that we'll talk about, I alluded to earlier, Windows Azure already exposes OData. We do that in the table service. The Windows Azure Marketplace is actually a place where if you guys are in the business of selling data, you can do that. But I think most of us are actually consumers. But there's really, really interesting repositories out there of data, you know, whether it's government data, sales data, you know, geospatial data, any, you know, all that stuff now is available for sale. And the Windows Azure Marketplace actually helps the vendors monetize it in a very simple way for you. And they even have a number of free services. So actually, there's even one more I want to hit on. You might not know that SharePoint actually exposes OData as well, right? So in SQL, our data is a table, usually, right, or comes from a stored procedure, and it's very tabular. In SharePoint, our data comes back as a list. And in the latest version of SharePoint, SharePoint 2010, all lists can be exposed as a list data service. And that truly is OData. And that's something that our teams have been working together on in a bit. And that's why now SharePoint can actually be its own first-class data source in your own applications. And I'll speak to that when we're going through Visual Studio. So just a ton of momentum here. And then, you know, other than these products, I would insert your products here, because that's what can also use OData. So that said, you know, given we've got a lot of line of business developers in the crowd, let's actually take a peek at how LightSwitch could do some cool stuff. So I'm going to do something that is incredibly risky, but fun if it works out. I'm actually connected to my VPN, so this is actually right now connected to a box in Redmond. And what I'm doing actually is I'm viewing a Windows server that's sitting on our network in Redmond. And the way I'm doing that is by using this guy, the Windows Management Framework. And the Windows Management Framework has a bunch of goodies for us, like a PowerShell 3 enhancement, which is amazing. And with the management framework, you know, in addition to the convenience layer of PowerShell, it also can expose your management information as an OData service. Very easy to set up. And then I start to see really powerful things. Like I start to see literally the list of processes and services that are on my machine exposed as data to me. And I can even read and write to this data, which is incredibly powerful, right? So let's start. We'll use our OData skills now. We'll kind of browse in. First, let's look at services. Don't pluralize this time, Paul. Okay. And these are all the services running on a machine. I can also look at the process. Apparently, that person's very entertaining. Let's see. All right, we can look at the processes. And to actually kind of keep it real, let's RDP into this thing. Can do it. There we go. All right. And we can have a little fun here. So let's start some random processes. Let's start a command prompt. Let's start a web browser. It Sure, we can even do the Metro style one. Now we got some processes that I know I started. Let's come back to our remote view on the OData service. And if I do a refresh, we can see that command prompt, and I think it's iExplorer. And we can see that iExplorer that we created. So this is kind of introducing the Windows management framework and how that opened up OData to us. But now that they've done that, we can really go to town and party on it as business developers. So let's open up Visual Studio. And we'll create a new project. And in the 2012 version, we now have LightSwitch as a core part of the Visual Studio product in professional and higher SKUs. If you're working on Visual Studio 2010, you can go get LightSwitch as a separate product, and it basically adds in and layers into your Visual Studio. And you can also get it standalone in 2010. So what we'll do, we'll create a Visual Basic LightSwitch application. And even though I picked VB, I'm still not going to have to write a lot of code to do this. In fact, I might not write any. So LightSwitch now, just as a reminder, you know, this is the easiest way, we think, to build a line of business application. So LightSwitch kind of asks us about two things. First, it kind of says, hey, help me get some data into the application, because it's all about data. And then once you have the data, you can start to add the screens and the forms that work with that data, right? So you can manipulate it, read it, transform it, mash it up, do all the kinds of things that we need to do with data. So, and then I have two sub-options under that. I can define my own structures for data, and that's kind of like object persistence, but I don't even need to think about it. I just define a table. LightSwitch creates entities, and it creates databases, and all the work that we would do by hand, it just sort of does for us. I can also work with an existing data source. And then in this wizard, we're seeing a number of first-class options that we have in LightSwitch. So we have of course, we have relational databases, whether that's SQL, Oracle, any .NET EF provider will allow you to connect to a database here. We talked about SharePoint exposes OData and kind of a special flavor of OData that we know how to work with really well. And then the fun part, we'll go to OData service. And all we have to do is just put in that URI or put in that endpoint. That's not a very nice endpoint. Let's get a better one. Let's take from here. Basically, you just want the Uber service endpoint. It's too early to do filtering and stuff like that. And I can impersonate, or I can use the integrated authentication, or I can even use basic custom authentication. I think over RAS, this is the one that's going to be happy. Okay, and then let's do a couple things. Let's give this a nice name. My server to manage. And actually, I'm going to regret that later. I know it. So we'll just call it my server. And then you can see really the schema, right? We talked about OData self-describing. LightSwitch just gives you a nice view over that schema, and it says, hey, there's two entities. There's your processes and your services. And I can see all the cool fields inside that. So let's just grab both of them. And now that we've attached to this data source, LightSwitch is going to basically give you all of the objects and all of the design tooling you need to work against that really well. And we have two entities, like we have processes and machine names. If I look back in Solution Explorer, I can also see that I have the services. And if I want to, I can even pick higher level data types. I wish I had one that had a URL, because then I would pick web address. But as you can see, LightSwitch is kind of smart. Even though it can't necessarily change the schema of the service or the database that something's coming from, you can change how you want to work with it. So if I have a string field that's always URLs and URIs, I can treat it as an address. Or if I have a high precision decimal field that I always want to deal with money, I can I can call out money. And then you get the right masks, you get the right controls, you get the right validation by default. It's actually really cool. So, I mean, that's a lot of talk, but all we had to do was that one step of just adding the entities. And now what I can do is add a screen. And there's a number of different templates, and this is extensible if you want to put in your own templates. But these basically have, you know, canonical different forms. Editable grids, pretty common. I could think of a search screen against an OData service would be really powerful. And one of our favorite things, master details. We can do that with list and details. And if there's any relationships between your data source, LightSwitch will detect that and allow you to kind of create those related fields. And one really cool thing is you can even relate two data sources that come from different places that don't even know about each other, right? So I could have document info coming from SharePoint, and I could append it with my own database that has additional data that original database doesn't have. So it allows you to kind of mash things up and add value to all the systems you currently have, right? And so let's do editable grid. And let's do an editable grid over services. And the nice thing about LightSwitch, I can hit F5 because the application, you know, most of the time, almost all the time, is going to be in a working state. It really was a design principle that every action you do will leave you in good shape. Now what I'm going to get is a desktop application, a VB desktop application, that has already scaffolded the UI over this OData service. So this application running right here on this desktop is connecting into Redmond, inspecting that machine, and now I can do really fun and or mean things. So what do we want to do? It's actually really dramatic to see if we can get back there. Look at the services. Which one do we want to change? ALG maybe? And I forgot to do one thing. That's okay. I made the data read only. That's no problem. So we'll just come back to the data source. We'll update the data source. We'll go back. And by default, it's attaching as read only. We'll just uncheck that, which implicitly allows read write. We'll do finish. And we'll F5 again. All right, here we go. There we go. Then I should. Let's see if it takes a second to refresh. Here we go. And you can see, just with that tool, we use the LightSwitch application to trivially remote, automate, and administrate a machine that's thousands and thousands of miles away. So that just kind of gives you the idea of the power that you have, not only to expose data, but even to expose some functionality, right? Because if you can model things like your processes, like your services, like your test frameworks, if you can model that as data and expose some actions, expose it as OData, you can access it anywhere in the world. You can even, with the right permissions, make it writable anywhere in the world, right? So we're starting to see that pretty cool power here. But wait, there's more. So we showed this. Just another light switch thing. I mean, we created a desktop application, but I could have just as easily gone to the application properties and made this a web application. Now it's going to run in the browser. I get the web deployment model, which is really cool. And as you probably saw in the keynote, it was mentioned briefly, but This is based on Silverlight, and you can also, coming soon, there will be extensions where you can do the same work in pure HTML. So you really have a lot of different options to just, you know, bang out these really useful business applications without having to do a tremendous amount of work. And, oh, there is one more thing I want to do. I keep closing. So let's start it back up. You know, LightSwitch isn't only a consumer of OData. It's also one of the easiest producers of OData, it turns out. So if you look under the hood of what LightSwitch is doing, it's actually kind of an MVVM-style application. We have views that can be, you know, browser-based, desktop-based, you know, Silverlight, HTML, whatever. But the actual middle tier is running as an OData service. So LightSwitch, when it consumes data sources, it wraps them with OData services so that the higher level view models and views can work with that data in an equal way. And the cool thing is, in this version of Visual Studio, Visual Studio 2012, we're exposing that convenience layer of OData to you also. So by building a UI application, you also get the OData backend for free. So all we have to do, so this is my, this is my LightSwitch application, so I should be able to type in myserver.svc, and I can see that I've exposed the UI-less OData head as well. And I can do all the same OData techniques that we just learned. Right? I get the full functionality of OData right away. So, you know, if you just want to expose OData immediately, this is an incredibly quick and easy way to go. And we'll spend probably more of the rest of the hour going deeper so that, you know, if this isn't exactly what you want, you're not comfortable with this, and you want to really go deep into code and customize the response, I'm going to show you how to do that too. But really handy to know this trick. And actually, this is a cool way too to take data from any of those different formats you saw, SharePoint, databases that were never exposed as a service, external services. You can bring them together, almost mash them up, expose them as your own custom service exactly the way you want, and then you've got it right away. So pretty handy. People usually like that one. All right. So let's move forward. Well, I guess we could start talking about Excel. another topic that really that makes me think of is, well, how do, you know, we exposed kind of limited amounts of data and we did some read-write operations. What does it look like to actually consume an absolute ton of data? And where can we get some of that data? So let me show you a few options that you have. First thing is the Azure Data Market. I want to make sure you know about that one. So if I scroll in here, there's different things in the marketplace, but data is clearly one of them. So it's data as a service. And there are paid offerings. There's a number of vendors that actually sell data by the kilobit, by the, you know, they have all different kinds of metrics for it. And there's a number of free providers. And that's a nice one to learn with and to get started with and just to see if you can take advantage of it today. I think one that's going to be really relevant to all of us is looking at the flight delay data, and we're going to figure out who's in trouble today or tomorrow going home. Hopefully not too disturbing. I don't want to bum you all out. But we can look at things like the flight data, and just so you know how to navigate the site, when you know they have pretty marketing pictures, but you can go to the details, just grab this URL, and this is the OData URL, right? So we know how to work with this. And then, as the website suggests, you know, there's a number of different tools that you can use, you know, whether it's Visual Studio, building your custom application, but we can also use Excel. And I think for really, really big data and slicing and dicing the data, Excel is, you know, really one of the best tools. What else did I want to say about this? Let's look at my account. I I think I did it with this one. Is it just me who has too many identities? I think I freaked it out by coming in my VPN. Darn it. Well, we don't need the VPN anymore. I'm sure the people on my team will be really glad I'm not doing that anymore. Okay, so now let's try it again. Here, let's just come in this way. Thank you. I came to this event hoping the internet wouldn't be sad. So that makes for a long couple talks about that. Okay. So let's go back to my account. And let's try it again. Let's try a trick here. I need you to forget me. I'm about to create a new account just to get around this. Okay. That is what we will do. Okay, we'll just make you read that. Good. All right. Please, come on. All right. Thank you for bearing with me on that. So now what we have, we've signed up to the data market, and I can use this endpoint immediately. And then, as it mentions, I have a number of different tools. So I want to eventually use Power Pivot, which is part of Excel, and I want to use Visual Studio. But kind of a handy thing we can do is explore the data set using the Data Markets online tool. And I could do things like, well, let's query on just this year and get the flight data for this year. And I'm starting to get a whole bunch of data back. And then when I get the slice that I'm most interested in, I'll export to either Excel or Tableau. Either one are great tools that you could use here. What that will effectively do is it will give you this Atom Service file. If I open it up, let's try it this way. I can see it's kind of like an RSS feed. It's just pointing to the query that I want, right? So it's pointing to the query with 2012. So it looks just like that OData syntax that we know. And then in Excel, what I can do is I can open that file. That actually takes a while because there's like hundreds and thousands of records. So I did that before today's session, and I saved it. I'll show you how I did it. So I've got Excel, and I've installed the Power Pivot add-in. That's a free add-in you can get for 32-bit or 64-bit. And all I would do is I would go to the Power Pivot window, and if my document already had the Power Pivot data, it's going to show up here. So here is all of the data markets data on delayed flights for this year. I could also pull it from a number of different places, from a database, right back from the Azure market, or in this case, when you guys are done with the session, you're going to be building a bunch of your own OData services, so you can just click on an external feed. This is how you pull your services data into Excel. And actually, I think this is becoming a standard icon for OData if you see it in different places. So we've already done that. You know, that would take as long as it takes to load all that stuff over the wire. And now what we can do is build a pivot chart. So what do we want to do? Let's inspect the carriers and the delay in minutes. Let's make that a little bit bigger. You guys see your flights on there? I'm sweating a little bit with Delta, but I'm doing a little bit better than this guy right here. I think actually I had a reference table. Anybody know off the top of their head what EV is? I think I had it. EV is Atlantic Southeast Airlines. So you might be in for some delays if that's what you've chosen. But we can kind of further slice and dice. So let's actually ignore the carrier, and let's think more about our destination. And let's get this out of the way a little bit here. So let's see. Some of these peaks are really standing out to me, right? So what do we have here? ORD, I think. Is that Orlando? Anybody going there? Hopefully not. San Francisco, you might be in for some delays. Atlanta, you'll be in for some delays. You get the picture, so we won't try to make everyone sweat too much. But really powerful tool that allows all of your business end users, your analysts, to consume the data that you guys are producing as business developers, including you might be producing this for yourself just to report on metrics and other things coming from your service. So just it's a good kind of a good handoff between, you know, us as developers and folks who are non-developers. So we saw that. Now let's pop back to slides. We have a number of partners around the industry also who are using OData, and I think a lot of these will represent probably sources of data that you all care about, right? Whether your data is in SAP, commercial data coming from the government, coming, you know, from a number of other kind of component vendors. Just so many of them now expose OData. And, you know, that data for a long time has been kind of locked. It's pretty hard to get into it. You know, maybe we're reluctant to expose, you know, our direct SQL queries into the SAP or the underlying SharePoint database. But now you can expose just the right pieces. You can use the right access control, and you can expose those, you know, pieces of data, whether it's SAP, Drupal, or whatever. You can expose it to the rest of your application. So it's a really good way to connect the data that we care about into our app. All right. Now let's go the next level deeper, as I promised I would, into how to implement our own OData services. We did it the easy way with Lightswitch, but there's actually really a continuum to be aware of. So I'd say, you know, the first option to really think about is WCF Data Services. You might also see it referred to as Astoria if you search online. But that's Microsoft's implementation of the OData standard, right? And there's all different kinds of implementations. This is ours. So if you're a .NET developer, we've got project types for this. You can get going instantly. We also have Web API. And Web API kind of brewed out of WCF, incubated a bit, and now it's a full supported part of MVC4. So when we create a standard MVC4 app, we can create a web API. And a web API is kind of like a web service, right? You know, we have controllers and web services that are methods that you make a request and they respond back with data. So web API is our standard REST story that we have in ASP.NET. And web API also supports what I'll call a subset of OData. It supports a lot of the query parameters, you know, the top and a number of those things that I showed you. It does JSON and ATOM also. And as a part of the roadmap, we're actually building a lot of the OData support into Web API also, so that you can, you know, whether it's data services you want to use or Web APIs, you have both choices, and you're going to get really good fidelity with OData. And so that's I think these approaches are actually converging and standardizing over time. If you want to drop even a level lower, we have the raw OData libraries, which gives you that common language and the common libraries to completely write your own data service that implements the same interfaces. So if you want to just kind of go to the metal, build your own completely custom service, you can do it that way, and it'll be conformant to OData. And we already talked about LightSwitch. So let's, you know, I should put a few commas here. Let's actually go through all of these different kind of implementation approaches. Well, at least the first two. We'll focus a lot on those in a demo. So now we'll open Visual Studio again. We'll close our LightSwitch app. Bye-bye, LightSwitch. And we will do, this time we'll do C#. And if I scroll down to, we could do a web application, maybe the WCF service. So let's start out with the WCF service application. And kind of like the steps in LightSwitch, I'm going to do similar things, but in a little bit more detail, and I'm going to do it using artifacts that we're used to in the class library, WCF, and ASP.NET layers. Right? So what I'll do is, first I'm going to bring some data into my app. My preferred way to do that now is using EDM, the Entity Framework. So let's add a new item. We'll go to data, and we'll add a ADO.NET Entity Model. I think I have my recipes database here. So we'll click Add. And you can create and kind of craft your own model, your own domain model, or you can generate it easily from a database. We'll take that approach. I have a number of pre-existing connections already. And actually, this one, this is my SQL Azure database. So if I scroll over here, oh, the cloud's going to be sad again because I have to log in with this guy. We'll see if it works. Less sad. Ta-da. This is that new management portal you saw in the keynote, et cetera. So here I've provisioned some databases in the cloud. And I have a number of things, recipes, celeb recipes, and the connection string you can easily get from the portal. And you can pop that into ADO.NET or any of the clients you want. So that's all I've done as a pre-existing step. I created a new connection. Yes, I want the password. And we'll save that to a config file so I can change it after deployment. Now Visual Studio is inspecting the schema. And what do we got in here that's interesting? We see some recipes. We see some profiles. Those are like user profiles. And we see some feedback. Let's start with these two. And what's happening right now is Visual Studio is, you know, inspecting the SQL metadata, and it's engineering all of the entities for me and all the schema and relationships and all that good stuff, so I don't have to take all that time. And I could define additional queries. I could define more stuff now. But that's all I really need to do to get going. Now what I'll do is I'll add a data service. And we talked about, you know, WCF data service is our implementation of OData. So if I pick from this template, I know that's what I'm going to get. So we'll click Add. All right, and in this recipe data service, you can see that there's a generic base class, the data service. So that is the easy convenience implementation of the entire data service. And all you have to do is say, well, what kind of data am I working with in the data service? And I just say I'm a data service of that type. So my domain in this case is the recipes. Celeb recipe entities. Right? And that guy is coming from the CDMX that's right here, just as a reminder. And that's actually basically it. That actually is implementing in just that one line replacement a full data service. But I want to do a little bit of extra customization. I can really control which entities and which operations get exposed to my end users. It could be just one named entity, or it could be all the entities. I think for the sake of the demo, I'll do kind of what Netflix did, and I'll expose all my entities and all my operations just by using the star wildcard. And another thing to kind of key into is you choose the version of the OData spec that you want to work with here. By default, it's V2, but we do support the V3 spec if that's what you want to take advantage of as well. There's some cool things like JSON Lite and Geospatial that we talked about that are goodies in there for you. All right, and that's basically it. We shouldn't need this service one. That's just a placeholder. Let's make this the startup. Not this one, this one. Let's make this endpoint the startup for the project. And let's hit F5. Okay, and cool. And what I've done is I've encapsulated my own custom data source, whatever it is. In my case, it was SQL. And I encapsulated that for my app. And now I can go into the profiles. Who do we have in here? Jay Schmelzer, uh-oh. Me, Joe Binder, Dave Menlin, Julia. Okay, we've got some interesting folks in here. So let's come back. We'll put in some recipes. And looks like we had some pretty interesting community submissions. Some that I would probably have, some that I might try to avoid. But anyway, you get the idea. So just in that very simple kind of piece, I took my relational model and I exposed that as a data service. And with that, I get the kind of full querying power over here. So we can say filter equals substring of chicken name. If I didn't miss anything, there we go. And fully searchable, queryable, filterable, sortable, all that good stuff exposed to the web, even to the cloud, with not too much effort. And then the great thing is, this is my source code, right? So at this point, I can use the authorization model that I want to use. Like in this case, I'm in the context of ASP.NET, so I can use ASP.NET's authentication model or my own custom code. I can bring in different libraries at this point and provide some of my own utility and function. So I have a lot more control with this approach, but maybe not quite as easy as light switch. So that's one option. And I want to show you another option. So I'd say this one is really good for you want a self-discoverable, really open kind of database or entities up on the web. If you want to be much more rigid about what you expose, exactly the data you want, exactly the operations you want, and nothing more, we'll take a look at Web API, which starts out closed, and then you explicitly open it up. So let's add a new project. We'll pick Web, MVC4. And then, you know, typically we pick like an internet application, but you can see that there's new templates, sub-templates, and this one is web API. I'll use Razor. That's nice. Actually, it's pretty sweet. You get the NuGet packages that'll probably help you the most to do modern web development, jQuery, all that good stuff. So that's coming down. All right, and then we're seeing a few samples, but this it's kind of like thinking about what's the interface of your application or of your API, and you expose that explicitly. So if you have a public method, and the method returns either a scalar value, like an integer or a string, or an IEnumerable, and there's lots of ways to get IEnumerables. You can have lists, ILists, collections, array lists, all that good stuff. Any IEnumerable or any scalar value can be exposed as a web API without you having to really think about how to serialize it and deserialize it over the wire. Web API will actually take care of that for you. So they have a few examples out of the box. You know, here's an array. You know, here's a simple value. One other thing just to kind of be aware of, just to know the anatomy of this a bit, we're going to take advantage of ASP.NET to use its routing. Okay, and one of the things I really love about MVC is automatically all of your logic is exposed as controller APIs, right? So typically we return an action result, like here's a view that I want, here's a string that I want. Those are all action results from a controller. So MVC basically knew how to do routing so that when you request a URL, the controller governs what gets returned back or even if some web page is displayed. And the ASP.NET team took the best parts of MVC for routing, and they merged it with web services, so you get kind of the best of both worlds. You get MVC routing, and then you can expose your data any way you want, and you get it back as OData, and you get it back as JSON. Does that make sense? Okay, so now we could do kind of a similar thing here. We could bring back some data. So let's add the same kind of a thing. We'll add an EDMX. From a database. Looks like a different one. The connection string. That's a local database. How about this one? Okay, that looks okay. Actually, this is my membership database. I don't want that. That doesn't look right to me either, though. Let's create a new connection. What's that? I don't know. I'll blame it on my VPN. I'm not sure. It's weird. It's like the connection didn't get cached, and it should have been. Let's see if we have more luck this way. Come on. You can do it. There we go. No problem. Okay, so we'll do the same thing. This time we could do, you know, recipes and feedback. And it's Visual Studio will do the same thing, inspect the schema, build out a model for me. All right. Now what I can do is I can make my own function. This time of I think I need to compile. Okay. I guess it's already imported for me. All right. And then we'll call this one recipes. Wants us to return something. Okay, so what we'll do now is we'll do our own kind of like link query. Well, the first thing I could do, I could say var query equals, actually, let's do one more thing. Let's get our domain class. So var DC equals new celeb recipes. All right, we're seeing guys, that's good. RQ equals DC dot recipes, right? And I can do any link query I want. Still not forgiving me for that semicolon, huh? It should be okay. Anybody spotting it? Okay. Thank you. Okay. Whew, survived. All right. Going back between a bunch of languages is really fun. Okay, so now let's run this guy. So the way we can think about it, anything that we expose in this controllers, by default, will be kind of API and then slash the name that we have here. Actually, what I should really do, let's make our own new controller. That's probably the right way to do this. And I can do a generic guy, or I can even have it scaffold using the entity framework. It's thinking. And you can see even more correct, right? So I'm using MVC's routing, where I go to the API, then the recipes route will automatically hit this function, and then we'll return back either a single recipe entity or an enumerable list of recipes. Okay, and it returned as enumerable, or to list would also work. Okay, and now what we can do, let's run this and try it out. So using the MVC style, we go to API recipes. And by default, Web API actually does respond with JSON. You can use either format, Atom or JSON as well. And we know the trick to do the accept with no S. I think I included in this schema, I think I have actual image data serialized. Probably not a best practice, but that'll make the JSON really large. There we go. Like I mentioned, see, a little bit too much data. I probably should refactor that into blob storage or into an image database. But anyway, you get the idea. So we saw two different kind of custom approaches. With this web API approach, I can even have additional business logic. So it's kind of like sitting a layer even on top of your data layer. This is kind of like a business layer. You can put your own business rules, your own business logic. You can do aggregation across link sources. And then you completely control what comes back over the wire just by exposing that in the right public function in your web API. So we saw two very powerful approaches. All right, and then just thinking about the roadmap and what's coming next. There's a number of things in OData itself that are on the roadmap, from vocabularies, spatial, things like that. So, OData we really think of as we're contributors now to OData, and we want to make sure we have a good implementation of it. Microsoft isn't necessarily the only thing driving OData. So, as these new important things come out in the protocol, we'll want to catch up with that. Also, with Web API, as I mentioned, Web API is going to bring on the really best things of OData into Web API as well, so that things that are kind of missing today, like the ability to do filters and subqueries, we expect to see that over time coming into Web API. And then you really, you can pick the right implementation and you don't feel like you're missing anything. Right? In terms of the announcement, you might have seen this 2 weeks ago, but OData is actually being standardized. And we're really excited about this. We're one of a number of companies in the industry who are working on this. And we just want OData to be a common standard. We don't want it to be just Microsoft's proprietary format. So, hopefully really good things will happen because there's a number of super strong companies who are contributing to the standard. And it also means that, things will be done in the interest of you guys, of the developers, so that there's a really good shared common experience for everyone working with data. So a very exciting thing. We're pleased with that. And actually, that brings us to the end of the hour. So I just want to summarize. We saw a lot of things. But with OData, it's extremely easy to expose your data and your logic in a consistent way to the web. We saw a number of ways that we can interact with OData. We saw a number of ways we can produce it, from easy to sophisticated. And we saw a number of clients that can use it. I didn't even get to show, but we could even, actually we have another minute. There's one more demo I'd like to show you. It's okay, being kind of random. I want to show you a completely different kind of a client. We talked about mobile, so what about if I had a metro-style app, completely mobile? Okay. And what we'll do, you can do standard JavaScript development. And the way we think about this in WinJS is we have the data.js file. That's basically where kind of all the data logic happens. And depending on the template, the structure of the UI is already scaffolded. So there's, actually, if I just show you, if I hit F5, we're going to see groups, so basically like lists of entities. And then inside the entity, you can click and see details. And so if I want to take OData and fit it into this model, what I would do, we'll pop down to the bottom, and they have a nice placeholder, which is like, put your code here. Usually VS kind of insults me when it tells me it can put code in the editor, but actually in this case, I really needed it. So what I want to do is make a request to my REST OData service. I'll just make that full size. So what we're doing is we're making a request to this particular REST URL, and I'm going to use the OData version. And I'm actually going to bring it back as JSON, because in JavaScript that obviously works really nice. We'll just do a one-liner to parse that into a list of results. We'll for each over them. And just for just a quick kind of adaptation to this template, the template thinks in terms of sample items. So I'm going to map a property from my JSON result into the existing object, and then we'll just push those objects up. If I didn't miss anything, we'll see at least a really simple uses of this. Looks like it did. There we go. Not the most ideal language to use here, but as you can see, we just, in a couple lines of JavaScript, we brought into a mobile application the same kind of data. So I just really wanted to show off there's just so many ways to produce, so many ways to consume, and the constant in all of it is the OData that we are using. All right, so with that said, I really want to thank you guys a lot. Remember to fill out your evals. The fives are for my boss. The comments go straight to me. And with that said, I really appreciate it. Thank you.